Grok Talk.
Welcome back to Grok Talk. Brought to you by the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers at CNHG.org and GraniteGrok.com. I am Steve McDonald here with Skip Murphy and Mike Rogers to talk to you about news, information, culture, and politics. And our next guest is Jazz Shaw, which means we're also here to talk about how we got locked out again. Jazz, welcome to the program. You there? Hello? Jazz, you there?
Yeah, now I am.
Oh, there we go. Sorry, I'm pushing the wrong buttons. Hey, welcome to the program. I've been trying to get you on here for weeks.
Hey, glad to be on. It's nice to be there virtually, although I prefer to be there personally. I've been really enjoying my recent trips to New Hampshire, and I'll probably be up there again in September. You guys have probably the most fun politics in the nation.
So Don't you think?
For junkies, it's a great place to go.
Yeah, and we have a great primary going on. You know, the Democrats don't have primaries because they're all so far left, nobody can get between them and the left wall already.
Yeah, I was up there earlier this year, interviewed a few of your primary candidates for the Republican Party, and that was fun. I saw you had one drop out a little while ago who I did an interview with, and that was kind of sad. I like Karen Testam. I don't know what you guys thought about her. I don't think she ever, you know, really got the wind at her sails to do any fundraising or really become a presence, but I thought she was very sincere and a nice lady.
Oh, she is. I've known her for years. In fact, a lot of us all travel in the same circles up here. So she's been a conservative activist forever. It just didn't turn out to be what people wanted for her to do here. But I don't think there's many topics or issues that we would disagree with her us here at Granite Rock.
None, I think. She's absolutely sincere, committed, a huge activist, and very energetic. And she's, you know, when she was running, she came over to meet a crowd at my house, and every answer was from the heart. There's no doubt about that. But she's never been able to get the broad base of support she needed to actually win statewide office. And, you know, I feel real bad for her, but that is, in fact, the case.
So as a nationally, more or less national pundit on the topics, what do you see from wherever you are about our current senatorial crop now that Karen stepped out?
I 2 months ago, I would have had a very different answer. I would have assumed that once she stepped out, at one point I saw something, she was polling up near 10%, you know, which is not shabby at all and not an insignificant number of people. And I would have thought that if she wasn't going to finish the race, that most of her supporters would probably gravitate over to Senator Smith, who I also interviewed. Thought, you know, he's got a lot of juice left in him, I think, personally. But the national opinion, of course, if you go and just talk with the chattering heads in New York City and down in the Beltway and all the money people, and I suppose Boston as well, everybody's just, you know, got this sugar high about Scott Brown. I didn't think that was going to happen. When I was up there for the Northeast Republican Leadership Conference, I talked to a few of your state leaders in the legislature, and I got almost universal responses of, you know, I'd talk to them and be like, hey, Scott Brown, huh? And they were like, not so much. So I didn't think he'd be doing as well as he's doing. At this point, I think the consensus is starting to, you know, drift that there was just too much money and too much outside power and name recognition in there, and he might drift across the line. And then comes the question, is anybody going to beat Shaheen? You know, I thought the chances looked a lot better earlier this year. Right now, it's going to be a nail biter, I think.
Yeah. Mike, if you're watching the live stream, Mike at the end of the table had Scott Brown into his house to meet a whole lot of people. And it started there that you could ask him a question, but he'd always deflect away from the question. It was always about his personal narrative about him. And we found it very difficult to get straight answers out of him. And so far, that's chased him around the state, where a lot of the activists who are really going to go out and vote for him are turning away from him because he won't give a straight answer. He says that, well, I'm the anti-Shaheen, and the latest polls came out that Bob Smith is just even with him or a touch better than what he's doing against Shaheen. And I just find it very amusing that the establishment wing of the party, including what we call the five families here, all the head honchos like Kelly Ayotte, Governor Sununu, and folks of that ilk, they're all in for him. And the grassroots are actually going, go away. We don't like you. And the latest polling shows the unfavorable rating. He's totally upside down.
Yeah, I mean, well, not just the latest. Since he got in the race, as long as WMUR and UNH, which are not exactly top conservative polling outfits, as long as they have been tracking Scott Brown, his unfavorables have exceeded his favorables by an average 10%. And even though the gap is closing slightly, his unfavorables continue to rise. And you know, you can't win an election like that. And my big fear is that they'll tick off just enough people that he won't get the turnout.
Well, that's very possible. But going back to what you said a minute before, his unique ability, well, not unique at all, to deflect a question and not answer it, I think that would show, you know, down in the Beltway at least, unique qualifications for being in Washington, D.C., because that seems to be what you get of most senators, so clearly he has some experience in that.
Send me to D.C. I'm as slimy as they are. Go, Skip.
Yeah. I mean, you've probably heard the joke of the two old-timers saying, well, what do you think of so-and-so? And the other guy says, well, I don't know. I've only met him three times so far. That retail politics really does hold here in New Hampshire. And what I'm hearing is that the more times, unless you're absolutely enthralled with him already, the more that the conservative activists see him, the less they like him. But they go to see, can we find a redeeming quality in him? And they're not. And that's a problem.
And that's exactly why I had the House gathering, was because I thought there was a strong chance he would get the nomination. Can we get behind this guy in a pinch? And the unfortunate answer is hell no.
Well, you mentioned the establishment figures in and, let's just be honest, largely outside of the state. Why would they have a vested interest in that? Well, it's the name recognition. It's the cocktail party circuit in New York and in D.C. Running a Senate campaign is expensive, as we all know. Primaries are getting expensive, but the general election campaign is quite expensive, a little bit. I've managed a couple campaigns myself, a little cheaper in New Hampshire than if you're fighting somewhere like in Florida or New York or something like that, but it's still expensive. And I think there was I don't want to use the word fear, but a concern, you know, of, well, who can attract the kind of money it's going to take to mount a challenge to an incumbent. And that might have also played a little bit in his favor for those who generally proclaim to know better than the unwashed masses, the rest of us, you know.
Well, thinking of knowing better than the unwashed masses, problem numero uno with Mr. Brown is he claims to read the bills, and he claims to know better than us unwashed masses when he should go along with the Democrats, which is most of the time. Steve, you telling me I'm getting low on time?
No,
okay,
nope, sorry. Not at all.
The other thing is, for a guy who reads the bills and is a lawyer, he's got astoundingly bad judgment of people and situations, as witnesses' involvement in a shell corporation.
Yeah, there's been enough stories about him, if the media ever took the interest to really go after them and bring them to the front page. But, you know, I'm not a creature of New Hampshire. I'm just so used to it between D.C. and New York City that that's just not a surprise anymore. You try to get the New York Times to report on something, the latest Lois Lerner story, for example, that came out. When they finally covered it 7 days after everyone else had hit it, it was on page A16. It was beaten out on that page by a new cooking show. So you have to be able to, you know, get some sort of earned media to go along with you, and if you're not in the right side of the think tank, or I should say the left side of the think tank, that can be exceedingly difficult.
And was that Janet Yellen's show on cooking the books? No, seriously. Well, what I want to know, and I can't find the root of it, is what he did in Massachusetts to tick off the Boston Globe, which is an offshoot of the progressive New York Times media, so badly that they are going for his jugular time after time.
The Boston Globe?
The Boston Globe did the research that broke the story on the shell corporation that he had signed on to and got the $1.3 million worth of stock.
But you're talking about Massachusetts. do they love Scott Brown? I would say you have to give that a qualified answer. If you have to pick a Republican they're going to like, well, Scott Brown's your guy. They're going to like him a lot more than someone who's more seriously conservative. But then if you offer them a choice between he or any other member of the GOP, any other person with notably conservative leanings, and then offer them a Democrat, you're going to go after the Republican.
Yeah.
All right, Jez, we're going to take a quick 60-second break, and we'll be right back to talk about something else like immigration or something. I mean, hang on a second. We'll be right back. Wait, no, we won't be right back. Wait, now we'll be back.
He tried to make us believe he was a fiscal conservative, but State Senator Dave Bouton has been deceiving New Hampshire taxpayers. Like a wolf in sheep's clothing, he claimed to be one of us, pretending to blend in, but all along, voting like a liberal Democrat. He voted to raise your gas tax by another 23%, taking a bigger bite out of our wallets every time we're at the pump. And oh, how he drooled at the opportunity to vote to expand Obamacare, which will result in higher taxes and longer wait times in the emergency room. And now the Senate wants to pass a bill to prevent us from criticizing Senator Bouton's vote? Call Senator Bouton at 603-203-5391 and tell him that we're on to his wolf in sheep's clothing routine. Tell him to stop pretending to be a fiscal conservative and start voting like one. Paid for by Citizens for a Strong New Hampshire.
I am Steve McDonald here with Skip Murphy and Mike Rogers, and we are Grok Talk, talking to Jazz Shaw, the weekend editor at Hot Air. Jazz, let's move on to immigration, which I think will probably play a strong hand in the next presidential election, but it may also play a hand in the November elections. What do you think?
I want to get to that in one second, not to derail your own show, but
oh.
For everybody who was just listening to that last ad that Steve Bouton had, I don't know who developed that, who sent that to you, but I do have a question. I was listening to the voiceover guy on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I hear a lot of ads in the New York and Pennsylvania market in Washington. I just came back from a trip to Tennessee where there have been a lot of ads running about the United Auto Workers story that I've been covering down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear it's the same guy that does the voiceover. Is there an army of guys in this country with the exact same voice? Or is this one guy they've got chained in a basement somewhere in a media center, and he gets like three pieces of bread and a glass of water a day, and just they give him scripts and he just runs ads? I swear, guys, it's the same dude.
Well, if you remember, for like movie trailers, it was the same guy for years and years and years until he died recently. And so I think maybe this and this guy isn't eating bread. He's probably got gold plates because he's probably making a lot of money doing voiceover work. But, yeah, probably is the same guy, and he probably just sits in a studio all day and reads these things.
Unfortunately, Steve does our voiceovers, but we haven't got the gold plates to give him yet.
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, you know, you got to keep at that because you eventually, if you don't get the bread, you'll get the plates. So. Anyway, to the immigration question, God, where do you even start?
We've
got the president down there briefly showing up and then going and making fun of the people who are criticizing him or even threatening to take him to court, et cetera. He's down there talking about the horrors of a situation which he has almost single-handedly created himself. Yeah, it dates back further, but the situation's certainly been exacerbated considerably over the last 6 years by the policies that we've had in place, not only official policies, but much more to the point, unofficial policies, what you say behind your hand when you're talking about, well, you know, we need to have a way for the undocumented, we don't want to say illegal aliens, because apparently you're a racist or a homophobe or something if you say that.
That would be us.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we've had people going out on TV and saying, oh, dear, we have to find a way to let them stay here. We have guys who are actual illegal aliens, Juan, I forget his last name, begins with a V, out there doing specials for CNN, having documentaries put on the air, people sitting there interviewing him, and he's talking about all these subjects while proudly proclaiming, well, I'm undocumented, you know, resident or whatever. And I find myself looking at that. I watch one of those shows, and I'm asking myself, you know, I realize ICE is overburdened, and, you know, they don't have enough people to round up 12 million illegal aliens. I sympathize with that. But surely they could find this guy. I mean, he's on TV. You know, how tough could it be to track him down?
About the same effort as it did to find that guy in Benghazi who's been doing interviews for 2.5 years.
Well, he's sitting at the hotel drinking his mango juice. But just to finish, that doesn't stay inside of our borders. We have international media. The word gets around. And particularly if you're, you know, somebody who's interested in smuggling drugs or weapons or anything like that, somebody who might, let's just say, benefit from seeing a overwhelming flood of people showing up at our border and overwhelming our resources, you know, they go out and spread those rumors. Hey, look at this clip we've got. They're talking about how great it's going to be, and you go, and nobody's going to send you back. And even if that's not true, you live in another country that has maybe, you know, 3 radio stations and 1 TV station 2 hours a day. You're going to hear that and be like, oh, we should send the kids. That sounds pretty good. You know, so I we've created this crisis. And I don't see any way to deny that and to pretend that it wasn't a fairly recent creation for the magnitude that we're dealing with is silly. And there is nobody in the administration or their supporters who is willing to talk even for a moment about doing something concrete to actually stop the flow as well as quickly and efficiently and humanely getting all the intruders out and back where they came from, unless you're willing to put something on the table in terms of, here comes the word, comprehensive immigration reform. And if you're not willing to talk about that, plus amnesty, plus this, then you don't get to talk about doing something to solve the actual problem. So politics has once again paralyzed us, and nothing's getting done.
Well, we need to get to single-purpose bills. So you say, close the border. If you don't sign this bill, the rest of it's dead. The same kind of way Harry Reid treats anything that comes out of the House. But that wasn't the point I really wanted to make. It was widely trumpeted earlier in the week that Guatemala and Honduras were running ads discouraging the shipping of children. But that's the public face. Under the table, I believe there are equally, if not more, reports that the governments are encouraging parents to ship their children. But what I really want to understand, and nobody's got an article on it, there has to be collusion between the Obama administration and the Mexican government to give these kids passage across Mexico, because Mexico can't stand illegal immigrants and will deport them back to their point of origin, toot sweet. So why the heck are they able to traverse hundreds of miles of Mexico to end up at our border?
I have an alternate theory from yours, sorry. I think it would be far more difficult for there to be some sort of American collusion for trailside activities, shall we say, going north-south across the length of Mexico than it would be for the actual powers that be in Mexico. And this is just opinion. Feel free to hang me out to dry. Mexico has not been run by the Mexican government in ages. Mexico is run by the cartels. There's a few places inside the cities. It's kind of like Afghanistan in that fashion. And I think there is a tremendous benefit, as I alluded to earlier, to, you know, swamping the American border and creating this sort of havoc. I think this if you have nefarious things in mind, that presents all sorts of opportunities. And if you are someone or some number of persons who are involved in various cartels controlling different bits of territory, then having a whole stream of kids and families heading for the border presents you with two opportunities. Number one, if you're involved in the pedophile child sex trade and drug mules, you know, picking off the odd kids, that gives you a much richer supply. And the ones that you don't pick off or don't care to, helping them make it to the border probably doesn't cost very much, and there's a plus for you in that.
Yeah, there was a report that I saw first thing this morning about some of these illegal children signing up for school in a northern border Massachusetts town, and they're kind of wondering whether or not these folks are really, you know, illegal alien children because their hair's gray.
I kid you not.
I got to go back and find it and post it. But here's the two words I want you to consider. Actually, four words: dense pack, cloward piven. Is this just another facet of what we've seen? I haven't been doing politics all that long, but I remember when I first opened up Granite Rock in 2006, it was easy to keep on top of the one or two very important issues. Now I almost paralyzed at the end of the day when I get home from work and I get ready to put fingers to keyboard. It's like, which one do I talk about first? there's so many of them, it's almost paralyzing. Are we really being Cloward Pivened here? Everywhere, you know, any issue, any direction, any facet of life in America.
I'm not going to say that's an unfair comparison, but I've been doing this a little longer since the 90s, and, you know, I watch the cycles come and go, and the news cycle is a self-feeding beast. It will never remain empty because, much like nature, it abhors a vacuum. But there are times when things are relatively better, let's say, domestically, and worse abroad, or vice versa, or there are one story or a couple of stories that are huge and they draw everyone's attention and everything else seems to get tamped down. You mentioned 2006, the whole period from 2004 to 2006, 2007 was dominated by the Iraq War and to a lesser extent the war in Afghanistan. It engaged domestic debate. Foreign policy was up front. That's what everybody was talking about. There were other things going on during that time, but they didn't get as much attention. If you wind down the wars, even though, of course, the first one that we wound down has now turned around and exploded in our faces like a bad 4th of July fireworks, and the other one's not looking too good, at the same time, we just have this plethora of domestic stories, and you might think, wow, the Obama administration's really done something wrong here, and everybody should be talking about that. And maybe your here is Lois Lerner in the IRS. Maybe it's the NSA. You know, there's any number. But no matter which one you're pointing at, there's a bunch more. And then you have a media required to cover them all, a large portion of which spent an entire month being preoccupied with a plane that went down and talked about virtually nothing else. So, yeah, you can become paralyzed trying to find things to talk about, but at the same time, I think this also gives non-mainstream media outlets, the less-heard voices, more of an avenue, more of an opportunity, simply because there are so many things happening that are not getting the kind of coverage that a lot of the political consuming audience would like to see them get. So, you know, it's an opportunity.
Jazz, I just wanted to ask, as a blogger, we often get, you know, we do this on our own time, so we pick and choose the stories that interest us at the time or that appear to have the energy necessary for us to make them get out there and have people pick them up. Your stage is a little bit bigger. Do you find people reaching out to you and saying, hey, how come you're not covering this? Hey, how come you're not covering that?
Do I find that? Once or twice out of every four comments on the site, out of every nine emails I get, out of 100 every day, no matter what you talk about, there will be, you know, everything from, you know, I really wish you would talk more about this, or there isn't a story, or why are you covering this up? You're clearly part of Nancy Pelosi's conspiracy, you know. But as you said, you have to find the stories that interest you when there's a lot of people already talking about those other things. I'll give you an example. This morning, I'm just looking at the lineup of things that I've already got published just today and stuff I have come up later. I have a piece on the Export-Import Bank, which I think is a hugely important story. Mm-hmm. But it's so far down the shelf that there's nobody on CNN, MSNBC, even Fox. You get a brief couple-second spot here or there. And it doesn't get talked about, and it is a huge story that involves a lot of taxpayer money. The second one I hit was more nasty illicit doings with the solar panel industry, where there are big problems. But again, if you're interested in hearing about, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, if you want the real bloody rag-waving, then that's just not interesting enough. And, you know, so where do you go from there? Well, you go and you do what works for you. You do what you think is important, and if people are that upset about it, well, they can go find what they're looking for somewhere else. There's enough of us now that there is somebody talking about it.
Yeah, and we do get the thank you. We get what Steve talked about was the how come you're not covering this? I get that quite a lot in emails. But we find that we're at a lot of the political events because we tend to be more politically oriented here, and covering events that there's nobody from the mainstream press there at all. We do the live streaming from there. We'll do the interviews because we're all a bunch of techies as well. So we take this whole technical stuff on the road and do that kind of stuff. But we do get that, thank you. And I do see a tremendous role, and hot air is one that I hit several times a day, to hear about the stories that the mainstream press doesn't even want to bring up. And I think it's more of a case, it's not a case that they don't have the time to do it, they don't want to do it for whatever ideological reason. And remember, as Glenn Reynolds, Instant Pundit, says, they're all Democrats with bylines anyways.
There's an element of both, I'm going to say. There was a time when I got into a rather, I won't say heated, but an extended debate with Jake Tapper. When the plane story was going on, I was sitting there writing like an article every other day about Leland Yee, and I'm sure you guys know who Leland Yee is.
We wrote about him.
But the vast majority of the country still to this day has no idea who Leland Yee was, because that was a case where the point I was trying to make was that in CNN's case, Jake did like hit it on Twitter and on his own The Lead blog on CNN's website. But they have their programming schedule, and there were X number of stories they could fit in on top of the plane, because that's all they could talk about was the plane for a month. And Leland Yee was so far down. But at the same time, there's no question in my mind that a lot of the powers that be at CNN, and I brought that up to him directly, though he doesn't personally own up to it, that they don't want to talk about a Democrat who gets in trouble nearly as, it's not nearly as much fun as a Republican who gets in trouble. And for sure, you do not want to utter the name of a Democrat who was a big anti-gun proponent smuggling weapons into the country, including rocket launchers. You know, that's a bad, bad story for Democrats, so they don't like it.
So you know, that must have been Leyland over in California.
That was Leyland Yee, yes.
All right, well, Jazz, we're running to the end of this segment. How would people reach out to you in the blog?
How would they reach out?
Email? Do you have a... If you wanted people to contact you for any reason, ask you why you're not writing about something?
Oh, it's no secret. I don't even use my hot air email. People can... I have one main Gmail address, which is just jazzshaw@gmail.com, and people are free to... You know, go ahead and lambast me or suggest stories, or if you're nice, you can even say, hey, nice job, you idiot, you know, or send tips, you know, for things that you think we should be covering. If it's interesting, I'll do that. But mostly, if you already have a comment account at Hot Air, obviously, just get in and jump in the comments. We read them, and if you don't, you know, let me know. Occasionally, we can, you know, scrounge up a couple extra comment accounts.
All right, well, I want to thank you for taking some time to be on the program with us. We're going to try to get you back at some point in the future, and you said you'll probably be here in September? Maybe?
Yeah, I'll be up there. I'll drop you a note before I get there. Maybe we can stop by and do a cold one.
All right.
Well,
thanks,
if, you,
Jess.
If you come up the Saturday before the Tuesday, we'll have you on the show.
I'm going to cut Mike off because we're running out of time. Have a great weekend. We'll see you. All right. That's Grok Talk. We'll be right back. Grokster's assemble. Us and whatever we talk about.
New Hampshire is famous for scenic drives, but they're tough to enjoy when you're on your way to the doctor. Because Obamacare limits your choices, some will have to drive more than an hour to see a doctor. What's health insurance worth if care isn't there when you need it? Gene Shaheen voted for Obamacare, putting your doctors and hospitals further out of reach. Tell Senator Shaheen, Obamacare is not working for New Hampshire.
She tried to make us believe she was a fiscal conservative, but State Senator Nancy Stiles has been deceiving New Hampshire taxpayers. Like a wolf in sheep's clothing, she claimed to be one of us, pretending to blend in, but all along voting like a liberal Democrat. She voted to raise your gas tax by another 23%, taking a bigger bite out of our wallets every time we're at the pump. And oh, how she drooled at the opportunity to vote to expand Obamacare, which will result in higher taxes and longer wait times in the emergency room. And now the Senate wants to pass a bill to prevent us from criticizing Senator Stiles' vote. Call Senator Stiles at 603-918-0553 and tell her that we're on to her wolf and sheep's clothing routine. Tell her to stop pretending to be a fiscal conservative and start voting like one. Paid for by citizens for a strong New Hampshire.
It's the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers. We're located at 8 North Main in Concord, New Hampshire. This is a repository for all things conservative and municipal. So if you have a problem in your town, your school, your budget committee, the right to know law, and now the top of our list is voter fraud. You have a tip for us, some information for us, you want to join or help us out, cnht.org.
Rock Talk.